Jacob Speaks to Pharaoh, a Bible study from Genesis chapter 47. This message by Pastor Rod Harris was delivered at Trinity Baptist Church on Wednesday evening, January the 5th, 2011.
Have you noticed it's a pretty easy thing when you're sitting and watching the television and you find yourself saying, I wish I had that opportunity. You see certain individuals and maybe they've been granted access to the White House and they've been given opportunity to speak to the president, and you're watching the television and you're thinking to yourself, yeah, I wish I had that chance because I know what I'd say. I know, given the opportunity, what I would like to do. And you look at certain people and say, now why didn't they do it? They had the opportunity. They were there. They could have said it. Why didn't they set the record straight? Why didn't they do the right thing? What's wrong with these guys? Well, have you ever had the chance to speak to someone in authority, surrounded by all the trappings of authority, and nothing came out? Ever find yourself thinking, you know, if I ever got the chance to tell my boss, I know exactly what I'd say, and the chance presented itself, but it just didn't come out. Or maybe it came out, it didn't come out in the right way, and you lived to regret it. It's not as easy as it looks. But what would you do if you were given the opportunity to speak to the most powerful man on the face of the earth? What would you say? I'm asking that because that's what happens in our text. Jacob is given the opportunity to speak to Pharaoh. Pharaoh at the time was the most powerful man on earth, and he got his opportunity. What did he do with it? That's what I want us to consider tonight as we look at Genesis chapter 47. Genesis chapter 47, we're going to focus on verses 7 through 10, but let's back up to verse 1 and read down through verse 10. So Joseph went in and told Pharaoh, my father and my brothers with their flocks and herds and all that they possess have come from the land of Canaan. They are now in the land of Goshen. And from among his brothers he took 5 men and presented them to Pharaoh. Pharaoh said to his brothers, what is your occupation? And they said to Pharaoh, your servants are shepherds as our fathers were. They said to Pharaoh, we have come to sojourn in the land, for there is no pasture for your servants' flocks, for famine is severe in the land of Canaan. And now please let your servants dwell in the land of Goshen. Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, your father and your brothers have come to you. The land of Egypt is before you. Settle your father and your brothers in the best of the land. Let them settle in the land of Goshen. And if you know any able men among them, put them in charge of my livestock. Then Joseph brought in Jacob his father and stood him before Pharaoh, and Jacob blessed Pharaoh. Pharaoh said to Jacob, how many are the days of your years? And Jacob said to Pharaoh, the days of the years of my sojourning are 130 years. Few and evil have been the days of the years of my life, and they have not attained to the days and the years of the life of my fathers in the days of their sojourning. And Jacob blessed Pharaoh and went out from the presence of Pharaoh. Then Joseph settled his father and his brothers and gave them possession in the land of Egypt, in the best of the land of Ramses, as Pharaoh had commanded. Jacob, the old liar and cheat, it's been a long and difficult ride for him. He's been up and he's been down. He's lied and he's been lied to. He's known prosperity and he's known adversity. He's known joy and he's known fear. He's experienced love and he's experienced loss. Now, as an old man, he has lived for 20 plus years in bitterness of soul because of the loss of his son, Joseph. It's been over 20 years since he's been told that his son had been killed. And now all of a sudden, out of the blue, he's told, no, Joseph isn't dead at all. He's alive. He's living down in Egypt. More than that, he's prime minister. He's leader over the land of Egypt. And so now he's made this trek down to Egypt to be reunited with the apple of his eye. You might remember that on the trip down there, he was a little uncertain. He was overjoyed with the prospect that he was going to get to see his son. He was overjoyed at the thought that his son was alive and he was going to be with him again. But he was burdened and fearful about what life would be like in the land of Egypt. And so he stops on the way at Beersheba, and there he builds an altar and makes a sacrifice to God. God honors him for that and reassures him. God tells him, look, I'm going to be with you. In fact, I'm going to make you a great nation down in Egypt. I will be present with you. As you go, I'm going to go with you. And that was enough. Now he had the courage. Now he had the confidence to move on. So in courage and boldness and confidence and strength, he made his way down into Egypt. In verses 29 and 30 of chapter 46, there is that emotional reunion with Joseph. And in fact, he says after the reunion, well, I can die now, which seems like a strange thing to say. 20 years, you've mourned the death of your son. Now you get to see him, you hug him, you love him, you kiss him, and you say, okay, I can die now. What he's saying is, I can die a happy man. I can die fulfilled. I am at peace now because I realize my son is alive. I realize that God has blessed him, and I am a fulfilled man. Now he makes preparation to meet Pharaoh. He's given the opportunity to meet the most powerful man on earth. But let's set it in context. Back in chapter 46, in verse 34, we read that all shepherds are detestable to the Egyptians. All shepherds are an abomination to the Egyptians. What is Jacob? He's a shepherd. Yeah, he's wealthy, but he's a wanderer. He's wealthy, but he's a nomad. He travels from place to place. He lives in tents. He cares for sheep. He has flocks. He has herds. And no matter how you want to dress it up, he is a shepherd, and all shepherds are detestable in the sight of the Egyptians. That's what makes verses 7 through 10 of chapter 47 so intriguing to me. To understand that the Egyptians despised shepherds, and then to consider the encounter between Jacob and Pharaoh. It's really easy to read over these verses. It's easy to pay little or no attention to them and say, well, it's just a matter of exchanging pleasantries. I mean, he gets the chance to meet the father of the prime minister, and so he's going to be courteous and kind, and he in return is going to say kind words to Pharaoh, and write it off as nothing more than that. But I think there is more to it than that. I think there are some things in this passage that are important and significant for us to note. In fact, I think we find an example of a powerful witness to the truth of God in the way Jacob addresses Pharaoh. By God's grace, our lives can speak volumes to those we meet. That's what I want us to understand out of this text. Our lives can speak volumes. I'm convinced that all of us are best served if we know a number of gospel presentations. I think we are best served if we know the Roman road, if we understand the evangelism explosion outline and the share Jesus without fear or all the number of things that are out there. The more of those you have a handle on, I think the better equipped you are, and that's good. And you ought to study, and you ought to memorize, and you ought to have available to you a marked New Testament and various ways for you to easily share your faith. And the more those you know, the better off you are. But the most effective tool you will ever have for witnessing to the truth of the gospel is a life lived in the power of the Holy Spirit. Unless your life backs up your words, it's a hollow thing. I mean, you can be slick at the presentation. You can work on that, and you can have it down, and you can spend so much time going over it that you know it so well that you can come at it from any different angle, and you can say, well, the conversation started here, so I'm going to make my first inroad here, and then I'm going to bring it around here, and you may be as slick at that as anybody ever has been. But if your life doesn't reflect the truth of your words, it's a hollow thing. And Jacob is speaking out of the overflow of his life. Jacob is speaking out of what God has done, what God has revealed to him, what God has made known to him and through him. And I think we find in him a powerful example in both word and deed. Stay with me, and I hope to show that to you. First of all, he reveals the fact that true blessing comes from the God of the Bible. Look at verse 7. Then Joseph brought in Jacob his father and stood him before Pharaoh, and Jacob blessed Pharaoh. And then you drop down to verse 10. And Jacob blessed Pharaoh and went out from him two times. In this brief encounter, we are told that Jacob blessed Pharaoh. Now, that's an easy thing to just look over if you're not familiar with the Hebrew worldview. If you're not understanding of what Hebrew culture says. In the Hebrew culture, a blessing is not a minor thing. A blessing is not an exchanging of pleasantries. It's not just you need to be kind, you need to smile, and you need to say something complimentary. The word that's used here is the word for blessing, and it is not just a greeting. It is a solemn thing. Because in the Hebrew culture, words are powerful. In the Hebrew culture, a word spoken is a deed done. And when he blesses Pharaoh, it isn't he says, "You're a great guy, thanks for taking care of my boy." He spoke a blessing. It was a solemn thing to him. It was a ceremonial kind of thing. We know that from the words that are used. Now, do you remember what happened when Jacob stole Esau's blessing? Do you remember how he reacted to that? He wept in bitterness of soul. And if you remember back in Genesis 27 when that happened, he says, "I can't believe you've done this. Father, is there not another blessing? Father, can't you bless me as well? Why can't you say, 'Hey, I take that back, it was the wrong kid.' Why can't you take it all back and give it to me?" And you remember what he said? "It's done. I can't take it back." A word spoken is a deed done. It's already been passed on. It's too late. There isn't another. So you think of it in that context when it says that he blessed Pharaoh. Here he is, 130 years old. He's a wanderer. He's a nomad. He's a shepherd. He's in the presence of Pharaoh. So you got to picture Pharaoh with all the splendor, all the grandeur of Egypt. He is surrounded by wealth and the signs of wealth. And so you find yourself saying, what could this funny little man possibly have to offer Pharaoh? And if you just look at the scene, if you just were able to walk up and see Pharaoh standing there in all of his royal garb, with all of the people accompanying him, with all the things that had to go with him everywhere he went anywhere, because there was always an entourage, and there was always a big ceremony, and there was always a big show, and you see all of that, and then you see this scrawny little shepherd standing there, and you see the scrawny little shepherd blessing the king, and you say, what's wrong with this picture? How is it that Jacob, the shepherd, blesses the king? After all, we read in Hebrews chapter 7, verse 7, it is beyond dispute that the inferior is blessed by the superior. In other words, the principle is the greater always blesses the lesser. So what's wrong with this picture? Jacob is not intimidated by the wealth, the power, or the influence of Pharaoh. Because Jacob knew that what he had was worth far more than anything Pharaoh had. Jacob knew the God who is. Jacob was the servant of the true and the living God. And so Jacob gave his blessing. You and I must recognize that we have the gospel. Because we have the gospel and because we are the people of God, we are a blessed people, a people blessed beyond imagination. We have been blessed with every spiritual blessing in the heavenly places in Christ Jesus. We have been made joint heirs with Christ. The glories of Christ, the glories of God, the splendors of the heavens belong to us as co-regents with Christ. We are blessed. Blessed beyond anything this world has to offer. And so Jacob blesses Pharaoh. We have been given the word and the ministry of reconciliation. We have been given the gospel to take to the world. That is our treasure. We are the fragrance of life. No greater wealth exists. We are called to bless others. And we are called to reveal in our lives, in the way that we live, in the way we speak, in the way we react to those around us, that real life, true blessing, comes from the God who is. That's being spoken, that's being lived out in the life of Jacob when he dared bless Pharaoh. The second thing that I think is important is that Jacob makes it clear to the king who has palaces and possessions beyond our understanding. Life is a pilgrimage. When he's asked how old he is, look at how he responds in verse 9. Well, my sojourn is 130 years. My pilgrimage is 130 years. He said, I'm a traveler. I'm a person without a home. Now, he says, my people have always been that. Well, it's true in a way for Jacob. It wasn't for Isaac. Isaac was more settled. But still, they were a pilgrim people. Jacob is speaking a profound truth that is an abiding truth for the people of God. This world is not our home. We are looking for a city not made with human hands. There's that great chapter in Hebrews chapter 11, the great hall of faith, where all of these biblical characters are put on display for us because of their great faith, because of their courage, because of their willingness to believe and trust in God and God's reward for them. And we read beginning in verse 13, these all died in faith, not having received the things promised, but having seen them from afar off, having greeted them from a distance, and having acknowledged that they were strangers and exiles in the earth. And the passage ends by saying, they desired a better city, that is a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared for them a city. Jacob said to this great king, this king living in luxury, this king living the life that the world envies and the world admires and the world strives after, this life is not the end. There's an eternity to prepare for. Jacob, by saying, when he said, how old are you, saying, well, my pilgrimage, it was a way of indicating, it was a way of saying, I'm traveling through, this isn't it. There's something beyond, there's something greater that I'm striving for, that I'm living for. He's saying to Pharaoh, and we are to say to ourselves and to others, life is to be lived as a pilgrimage. Our eyes are set on God's distant city. We are not so anchored here. We are not so tied here. We are living for eternity and not for today. Now, that's a powerful testimony when we live it out. That's the key. It's a powerful testimony when we live this truth. Not just we say it. Not just when we claim it. But when it's reflected in the character of our life, when it's reflected in the decisions we make, when it's reflected in the way that we live, when it's reflected when we respond to tragedy and heartache when it comes to us, in the loss of things, in the loss of stuff, when we react in such a way to say, it's okay, because that's not what I'm living for. It becomes a powerful testimony. The years of my pilgrimage, the years of my sojourn, are 130. They're not as long as the sojourn of my fathers before me. He's saying, I'm living for something beyond this. See, the thing is, our world lives for those things that they can touch and feel and smell and taste. And they can't even imagine giving those things up for something they can't see. But it's the life we're called to. It's the privilege that belongs to us. We are longing for that city beyond that's more real than what we hold in our hand today, that is more real than what we do taste today, because what we feel and smell and touch today is gone tomorrow. But that abides forever. My pilgrimage. I'm moving toward my home. I'm longing for that city not made with hands. Jacob said, life is a pilgrimage. This is not home. The other thing that he made clear is life is short. My years have been few and difficult. Now that sounds funny to me when he says, I'm 130. My years are few and difficult. It sounds funny until I consider that I have finally reached the age that I realize just how brief time is. That, you know, I sat here the other day and thought, wow, I can't believe it's Christmas because spring break was last week. That's what it seemed like. My days are few. 130 years. It's no time. It's gone in a moment. The psalmist says, well, you have 70 to 80 years, yet their span is but toil and trouble. They're soon gone, and we'll all fly away. He goes on to say, so, Lord, teach us to number our days, that we might get a heart of wisdom. James reminds us that life is but a vapor. It's here today, it's gone tomorrow. There seems to be some self-pity in Jacob's voice. But a greater truth is still revealed. Life is short, and I'm going to a better place. What would you say if you were given the opportunity to speak to a world leader? If you were granted an audience with a world-dominating leader, what would you say? What would your testimony be? Well, to say that real blessing comes from the God of the Bible, that life is a pilgrimage, and that life is short, therefore prepare to meet God, is not a bad presentation. It's not a bad way to speak eternal truth to even the most powerful. How we live, empowered of the Spirit day by day, empowers the testimony of our lips. Living the life empowers the testimony. This is the life we're to live. Understanding, this world's not my home, so I'm not tied to it. My life does not consist of the things that I possess. It does not consist of my bank book. It doesn't consist of my stock portfolio. It doesn't consist of what I have been able to accumulate. This is all transient. What matters is that which is eternal. And I understand that no matter how long I live, it's not long enough. And I best prepare and be ready. That's the life we're to live. That's the testimony we're to bring, whether it's to the most powerful man on earth or whether it's your next door neighbor. May God grant us the courage, the boldness, the wisdom, the grace, and the love to so live and so testify.
You've been listening to a Plowman podcast. Find us on the web at theplowman.org. The Plowman features the preaching ministry of Rod Harris, pastor of Trinity Baptist Church in Tulsa, Oklahoma, located at the corner of 41st and Union. To learn more about the ministries at Trinity Baptist Church, visit us on the web at www.tbctulsa.org.